So today is Father's Day. I too want to extend a special just happy Father's Day to everyone, especially my own dad who's here. And you know, be sure today just take a moment to call your dad, grandfather, I don't know, some of you are actually dads, even though you're moms. And some of you may be calling a grandmother who was both mom and dad to you. That's just what time it is, you know, nowadays. And so be sure you take that moment to call. I'm going to be calling a few people today, just recognizing and understanding that, you know, who I am today is made up of you know, all of these people. And, you know, recognition of Father's Day, just want to send a special shout out to them. I've already gotten a few texts this morning. It's pretty cool. And I don't know about you, but for me, in terms of shaping who I am as a father, you know, I've always had these different images in my mind. I think it started with going to a movie in Mila Deepest, Oakland, when I was like 12 years old. I saw The Lion King, and I was like, I'm going to be Mufasa. And if you think that's like real childish, you know, these cartoon characters are based off of real people, right? You know, writers who write these characters who are like us, right? And then, you know, growing up a little bit more, you know, watching Boys in the Hood and Trey's dad, who was Furious Styles, you know, I was like, I'm going to be like Furious, just ready to pull out my 357 if anyone comes in my house as a father. You know, these are the adolescent thoughts that you have, but you can't get away from. You know, these are the stories in our minds that are seared into our thoughts, branded on our brains. And we just can't help it. You know, whether the stories are good or bad, depending on our makeup, who we are, our cultural values, we just sort of take these things in and they sort of guide us, our decisions, our wills, and we trace them into the tapestry of our lives, hoping that they can come to pass. And, you know, if we're doing good, like meaning that the reality matches the story in our minds, then we feel good. But, you know, sometimes it doesn't match and we constantly have Mufasa, or we have Furious in our minds, and you know what? We're not feeling too good. We're feeling insecure and fearful because we don't know what to do. We're not strong. We're not that manly father type. Or forget the masculine side, but, you know, just you're not as smart as you thought you were. You're not as beautiful as that, whatever. You know, I don't want to go back and forth, male, female. It's just, you know, who we are as people. And sometimes the weight of those stories in our minds crush us because they don't fit with the reality of our lives. That's how we work. You know, stories, life is all about stories. And we view our lives as the stories that we've lived. But in terms of moving forward, how we make decisions, it's about these images, these paradigms we have in our minds. And whether or not you think you're real smart, you just think logically and unemotionally, unattached, you're just going to make the right call, the right decision after you've weighed all the data, you just can't get away from it. You're going to have that slowly guiding and creeping. And even if you don't have that story determined what you do, it's going to be judging what you do. You know what I'm saying? Emotionally, like, I don't know. That's not how Mufasa would have done it, you know? And so it makes us sort of run away. And even though, you know, just like Simba, and even though we might not be seeing Hakuna Matata out there, you know, we nonetheless sometimes feel like fools that we're just not measuring up to that story that's playing over and over and over again. It's no different here. You know, in this story, in this passage, it's one of the best stories, the best parables, I think, it's ever told. And it's in the Old Testament. It's a great parable. You see where Jesus kind of gets his gift of telling parables and why he did that. He never really, you know, went back and forth with a lawyer or with a technical writer or, you know, back in his day, he just sort of said, let me tell you a story if you want to know who your neighbor is. You know, and I think he got it from the long lineage of prophets from God who were sent. And Nathan just knew how to come at David. You know, when David was lost, when he had lost his way, you know, here we have a powerful king, a heart king who had no heart, an honorable king, you know, sleeping with his friend's wife, a wise king scheming, devising a plan to kill his friend to cover it all up, a compassionate king who didn't shed one tear over doing all of this. You know, a soft-hearted king who was labeled you know, the only label who person who got this in the Bible, God after a man after God's own heart. And it seemed like he had no heart. It was just hardened. But thank God that he doesn't leave David where he is, in a place where he's just self-destructing, unable to bring himself back from the brink. It's basically almost death. It says that in Psalm 32, you see where he's at, where he says, my bones were being crushed, even though my flesh and my heart and my organs were getting hard. It's like the pain was so deep, but I was suppressing it, that the bones were being crushed. Some of y'all know exactly what that feeling is like. And even though you have a cognitive dissonance in terms of really thinking it through. And he goes on in Psalm 51 to say, I've lost the joy of thy salvation. How do you lose the joy of God's salvation? You know, I mean, we do it all the time, but when you really come to think about it, it's like, hey, I'm saved. No matter what today will bring, I might be broke, but I'm saved. You know, I might not have it like that right now, but I'm saved. You know, one day I'll die, but I'm going to be all right. I'm going to live with God. To lose the joy of God's salvation for a long, long time. It says it's 9 months plus that he's in this state. And he says, renew a right spirit within me. I believe David had like an evil spirit hovering over him. You know, sometimes I won't go into that. Just hanging out. You can have an evil spirit around you. You know, maybe not in you. I'm not getting into all that. But it's just, you can be just, and that was David. His bones being crushed, unwilling, unable to come out with it. Thank God that he sends a prophet to tell this story to David, to you know, so they could put David's defenses down. His heart can once again get into it. Emotions get into it. You know, what are the stories that are in your minds that have determined how sort of you go about doing things? You know, even the best of us, one of my favorite players is LeBron James. And, you know, he gets, just being great, being the best player, basketball player in the world, he gets criticized a lot. And so sometimes he just sends out tweets with memes. And one day he just sent out a tweet of a fist, and it was Arthur's fist. Some of you guys know Arthur's cartoon just right here. And he's, well, all you guys are yapping, I'm going to, you know, and you could tell that's an image he had in his mind as a little kid. You know, it's like Arthur's being made a fun of, you know. But under the weight of all the pressure and the Warriors beating him 4-0, you know, I was so, I don't know, I just, the way that all went down, it just didn't even sit right. I couldn't even go to the parade. But I heard at the parade, you know, Draymond Green, LeBron's main antagonist, you know, he had a shirt basically making fun of that fist. The same fist. Well, I got three rings, you know. LeBron has three too, but you know, it's like that's, I'm making fun. And you know, that's what we're afraid of, is that we have these images that sort of guide us, how we value and judge our lives, how we're doing. You know, does it match up? Yes. If not, you know, I'm just gonna take the blue pill, like in the Matrix. And I'm just gonna live, you know, in this world of steak, even though I'm not. It's not real. And we keep up the facade. How you doing? I mean, do you find yourself constantly faking it till you make it? And there's great value in that. Don't get me wrong. You know, for those of you who are just having your first job or a new job and you feel like you don't know that much and you're faking it till you make it, you know what? Everybody's doing it. All right? Everyone's doing it. And the more personality tests they put on you and this and that, these different rounds of interviews, it's just, you know, all different forms of weakness that we just don't know. We're just sort of trying to put the pretense and keeping up appearances, you know? But that place of getting it to where someone's going to completely clown us because whatever story we put out there, it didn't measure up. You know, what story do you have in your minds? And so, you know, we, in order to protect ourselves, put out strong stories in our lives. You know, we want to be rich, powerful, or we want to be smart, intelligent, go to the best schools, get a good job, come up with creative, ingenious ways to solve stuff, to make stuff better for people, to serve, you know, to have that right car, right spouse, right number of children, raise them the right way, right schools, you know, that right class. You can't miss that summer thing to go do this. And, you know, we plan out our lives in this fashion, you know.
pursuing, but sort of running away to as well, because we're being chased, you know, by these stories, by these images, Arthur and whatnot, you know, furious in our minds. And so when you come to church, when you get with the community of believers that have faith, you know, one of the first things they tell you is like, pray and then read the Bible. So it's like, instead of having these other stories of, you know, the world in your mind, go and have some Bible stories, you know, in your mind. But even Bible stories, we get all messed up stuff. You know, case in point, this morning, we're looking at Nathan telling a parable of a rich man and a poor man. And I don't know about you, maybe it's just me. I don't really see the poor man in this story. At best, the poor man is sort of an object, someone to be pitied. You know what I mean? Like, and we sort of even despise the poor man. The most we'll think about the poor man is just to hate the poor man for being poor. You know, I'll break that down in a second. Really, who we see is like this rich man with everything. And we just kind of feel sorry for this poor man. That's a nice, cute picture, but you know, it's more like pitiful. And we miss the poor man's story. Let me get into the poor man and say like why. I don't believe we miss it, but I think that we're just wired in a way where we can't handle the poor man's story. So you guys know what I'm saying? You know? At first, we just want to treat that person as an object. Just like we treat Uriah as an object in David's story of vice and vanity to redemption and renewal and reinvention, right? That's how we treat Uriah. I mean, Dennis, one of the few preachers who actually humanizes Uriah and brings up different characteristics about who he was, not just that he had honor and such, but just, you know, his Hittite background and how he came about, you know, meeting Bathsheba, being close to the, you know, to the castle, to have David actually, you know, see his wife. It's, you know, but we don't do that. We just say, oh, poor soul. If we don't do that, then, you know, the other times we're feeling sorry for the person in the poor position. You know, it's like, oh, I feel sorry for those, you know, North Korean people. I feel sorry for, you know, such and such. I feel, you know, one of my favorite books reading to the girls, I need to read to Xavi more, my boy, but, you know, you kind of get tired after your third and fourth kid. And, you know, so it's like our top two kids are like scoring this high in the test, and Xavi's like, but, oh, he's like way below standard, and it's like, oh, shoot, we need some work. But one of the favorite stories was Beatrice's goat, you know, forward by Hillary Clinton, and story of how this poor African girl had no shoes, couldn't go to school, you know, utter poverty, and, you know, we have pictures, whether in Sri Lanka, India, Africa, you know, these images come to us, and we say, oh, poor girl. And then we hear she got a goat. And from the goat, from the milk, the cheese, the yogurt, the ice cream, whatever she's making from that, you know, milk, able to go and buy shoes and go to school. And now it's like a real story made. But even how we view Beatrice, it's like, oh, that's cute. I wouldn't want to be Beatrice. I wouldn't want our kids to be Beatrice, you know. But I'm glad that she made it out. And at best, we're not mad at her. Like we are often, we're mad at the poor. We're mad at the one that's suffering, as if it's their fault. We blame them. You know, and if you're like, oh, I don't do that, it's like, well, maybe you're better than me. But I tend to have like an anger build up inside of me, like, it is your fault, you know, that you let yourself be so weak that you're going to just let this thing be taken from you. You should have just fought with your life and given up you, your family, your whole household to keep this land. You shouldn't let just somebody come and take this from you. No, it's your fault. Yeah, I mean, that's kind of my defense mechanism. But I find that I'm doing that, you know, with so much in my life. You know, you're lazy. You know, and we all hate, not hate's a strong word, but we're all so annoyed at, like, the lazy person. You know, we say, whatever's coming to you, you're going to get. It's not just in the instances where their laziness affects us, right? You know, we got to do their dishes. We got to watch their kids. We got to, you know, all that. But even when it doesn't affect us, when someone is just lazy, like you walk in, you see a grown teenage boy playing video games, sleeping, eating all day, right? And it's just like annoys you. It's like, you know what? You're not going to amount to nothing in your life. It's going to be all your fault. And that's sort of like how we view, you know, this poor man. We can't help it. We can't get away from it. You know, whatever the case is, whether it's being overlooked as an object, whether it's being pitied, whether it's, you know, really being angry and blaming the poor person, whatever the case is, we just want to get away. We can't see ourselves, you know, just in the place of that one, you know, poor person. You know, there's so much going on. Just being in a bad position, we're like, we're not going to be in that position. There's so much evil being done in this world. You know, heinous stuff, a lot by our own country. You know, at the border, in these past 2 months, 3,000 children have been separated, taken from their parents. You know, because they're illegal, they're committing crime. Shouldn't let them into the country, so it's not the kid's fault, but nonetheless, we're going to punish the kid. Not really. We don't think that, but we're going to take them away. You know, in Syria, seeing the next generation, just, you know, half of them just completely, you know, just the future being taken away. And housing, just how we have this crisis right now at housing, and it's not like there's a crisis in terms of people having property to rent. You know, it can be done. But it's just people keeping their economics and not realizing that, you know, these are people's homes. And being evicted out on the streets, the homeless, it's like, man, and I'm not saying I have, like, I mean, I have some solutions. I know we can get through it. But it's like, you know, the level in which the evil is out there. I mean, that's what I put. We don't want to be in that position. We don't want to be in that losing or loser. Maybe that's too strong. Just losing position. Having your job taken from you, you know, just completely snatched from under your feet and not being able to earn, you know, just not being able to earn, that's like really tough, switching up your life all of a sudden, that you're not going to be earning money for the next period of your life, you just got to get and receive whatever, in this, you know, some of us are going through that. One thing that we deal with Tribe in Oakland is just seeing parents who are helpless, so they send their kid to, you know, they've crossed the border, or they're first generation, or they've grown up in the hood, and they send their kids to school to get a break from their kids, to be honest, right? You know, but then also it's like the main reason is I need my kid to learn to do better, to make better than and not end up like me. And then feeling helpless because the school system's broken and you can't fix it. There's all types of levels and it's been happening for decades. It's like, what can I do? I can go volunteer till, you know, and it makes a little difference. And just seeing that, it's just heartbreaking. We don't want to be in these positions of losing. And so that's why when we see and we hear a parable, rich man, poor man, and we say, oh, have Bible study, you know, Bible stories in your mind, and that way you won't have that effect of always taking the blue pill, you know, and living, you know, off that no, you know, have, but we mess up the Bible stories too, because we bring, you know, our own paradigms, our own values that we have and what we should be like, it's just ingrained in us. How do we get away from that? You know, because this rich man, even though he is rich, he's despicable, dishonorable, we still somehow gravitate towards him. I mean, who is this rich man? Rich man does not understand the power of one, does not value life. He has one sentence to define the rich man. Basically, he was a man had a lot. Verse 2. That's what it says. He just had multitudes. Whereas you compare that with the poor man has like five sentences. Did this, slept with the ewe man, ewe lamb, ate at his table, he cared for, devotion, was like a daughter to him. And all these things describe how he understood the power of one. Whereas the rich man, it's like, has no, you know, doesn't understand the value of simple things. You know? And because of that, it's easy for the rich man to be a taker. You know, because it's just, you don't understand the power of one, relationships, another human being, so you can easily take from them. Instead of protecting the poor, you take advantage of the poor. It's one thing to have like natural disasters completely decimate our lives. You know, I'm thinking of Puerto Rico, still struggling. You know, we as a church gave what we could, you know, about $700 just to, you know, we're a poor church, but just trying to help out. Like, hey, you know, some connections that we had, people were flying back to Puerto Rico, and or a big earthquake. Thinking of Linda Kohei in Japan, you know, 311, their 311s, our 911. You know, it's seeing them still dealing with the radiation, people are depressed, suicide rates, you know, going up, fires, you know, Santa Rosa, in our church family, having fires decimate our families. And even though those can crush us, the miraculous seems to happen where God just seems to come through. You guys know what I mean in those situations? Where people come together. It's discouraging, but it's not nearly as discouraging when you see people taking from people. It's like you say in your mind and you pause, you know, that's a special type of evil right there. And that earthquake, it's evil, but it's almost benign. It's like, God, what are you doing, you know? But when you see a person, a landlord, just forgetting that his tenants are people and that the landlord's not going to go broke or whatever by coming up with a different business practice, losing a little bit, it's just like, you know, it's a special type of evil when you really look at that. That's who the rich man is. We're attracted to the rich man. Why? Why are we attracted to these despicable, just totally unadmirable things? Why? Because a rich man is who we are. It's our story. It's our story of like, oh, we're going to mess up, but we're going to come back. We might be down, we're going to get back up. You know, we might be totally in a bad spot, but we're going to redeem ourselves. You know, right? You know, we have these paradigms, these stories in our minds that work for us. And it starts a lot of times with Bible stories. You know, we like defend our position. I know some chaplains who go in and they talk to sports teams before big games, you know, football teams and basketball teams and such. You know, these chaplains, when I talk, hey, what do you talk about with them? It's never about like, oh, this poor man here. It's always about David's 37 mighty warriors. Go out and get them. You know, I'm not saying they shouldn't, but I'm saying, again, this is just reinforced over and over again. Peter walking on water, you can do it. Peter failed, but you can do it. You know, go out there and do it. David beating Goliath. For me, the sort of storyline I've had in my head for a long time, just trying to get away from, is that I'm the underdog, you know, overlooked. And when no one expects it, I'm going to come through. And I'm going to save the day, make the situation better, and solve the problem. You know, I mean, that's a very typical Oakland, you know, gritty type of perspective, that you're going to, you know, come that way. You know, other stories that we have in our minds, you know, it's like, I'm going to grow up, I'm going to be a protector, I'm going to be a cop, be a fireman, be a Marine. Some of us, especially growing up in this generation, I mean, I wonder if, you know, maybe one of my children has it, it's like American Idol storyline, you know, that I'm living just this mundane life, but all I need is a stage. Once I get on that stage, I do my thing, and people are going to see something inside of me, and they're going to discover me. You know, and that's what I need. That's what I'm waiting for to happen. You know, good grades, outwork everyone, that you know, you're going to be, you know, saving someone, sacrificing, you know, that Jane Goodall, Mother Teresa, you know, path. I'm kind of shy to bring this up, but, you know, I know it's still there, you know, for a lot of people just growing up with Barbies and princess and wanting to be beautiful, sought after, admired. You know, we just can't get away from these things. They're just crushing us. And you know, part of like thinking this through, I was thinking about this, you know, passage for like the past 3 weeks, and I kept on saying, God, you really want us to be a loser? You know, you don't want us to clench our fists and kind of like, you know, push through? I just kept on peeking and like talking to God and was like, man, Lord, I can't believe that you're actually like, you know, this is what you want me to preach on. This is like the path for someone who believes in Jesus. I mean, we're in Berkeley where, you know, the smartest, the world leaders, and we're in Oakland where even if you're poor, you make it, and even if you have no education, you're still a YouTube superstar or whatever, you know? It's like, I'm going to go out. Lord, you really want me to be... I just could not get away from this poor person. It was like, you know, tormenting me. And I think the reason why that, you know, before I go into the poor person, I just want to say, if you're still sort of unconvinced, and I'm not trying to convince you on this, because it takes time, but you know, the end result of sort of going down the rich man's path, we sort of, you know, all know it. The Bible lays it out clearly in just the next generation of David's sons, Absalom, just doing the despicable thing of incest and just all to get back at his dad and take power. And then generations later, grandson upon grandson, we have the story of Ahab. Very similar story to David. You see the nexus here in David. You see a manifestation in Ahab, probably the worst king in Israel. His wife Jezebel comes, "Fool, why are you crying on your bed?" You know, she just was like that. She was gangster, right? And the Ahab goes, "Naboth won't sell me his vineyard." And he starts crying, you know. It's like, "Man, you're the king. Go take it." You know, even though he has hundreds of vineyards. So he sets up a plan, kill Naboth, take the vineyard. We see the end result. It's like an endless wandering of constantly trying to find, you know, that perfection that only exists in our minds, you know, for that satisfaction that only is seared into our brains and never like works out in reality. And we just have this like these almost BS thoughts of, you know, life is best lived as a tragedy, right? You know, and I sort of been thinking about Anthony Bourdain, and it's just like perplexing me, you know. It's like, gosh, you know, his life and you know, constant chasing, never satisfied. So how, you know, even though we know that's how that ends, we still, at least I still sort of constantly say, how can I be strong? How can I be wise? How can I fight through this situation? And it's hard to really like take in this poor man's position. You know, we stay at the rich man because that's our story. And at best, the rich man's story is one where the rich man gets redeemed and renewed and reinvented. Right? I mean, that's how we sort of put the gospel lens on the rich man's story. But I think that there's this gold nugget here that God has for us in this passage that we can completely miss if we just don't focus on the poor man. But when you like just look at the poor man in those five sentences and let it just marinate, what you start seeing is that the rich man is our story, humanity's story. The poor man is God's story. The poor man is a story of God if he were a man. The poor man's story is the story of Jesus. That's exactly who Jesus was when he came here. He was vulnerable, weak, if you will. He was the weakest person when you compare it to who he was. Right? He chose that. He chose, and I wouldn't say he chose, he just got taken advantage of like this because of his position. He was humble. He had to be humble. He humbled himself, but when he's here, born in a barn outside your country, because you couldn't be born in your country, you have no choice but to be humble. You know, this poor man's, you know, position, all those things, not very attractive, sort of attractive, but then some cool things start peeking up. You know, this guy valued the ewe lamb. Imagine being one of the, just the one ewe lamb, loved. You get to eat from the table, you know. Yeah, I'm there. Sleep, you know, with the boss. Oh, that came out really bad. Sleep with, you know, and you know, you get to. Whereas you think of you're a sheep of one of the many, right? Just a number. What can you produce for me? So different, you know, to be loved. The poor man understands the value of one, understands relationships. And if you understand relationships, that's it. You ain't got to understand that much else. You can have a very, very subpar IQ. You get relationships, you're going to be okay. You know, that's the poor man's position. Living life vulnerable, weak, knowing sacrifice, appreciates easily, thankful, has a heart of compassion, full of love, innocent, complete, unimpaired, sound. This is Jesus. This is who people say, well, what is God like? Look at the poor man. We think God is the rich man. God chooses, God loves, God is the poor man in Jesus. And that's the reason why David, you know, I Googled this. It's actually a very, very often asked question. What does it mean when David is said to be a man after God's own heart? And I think that this is what it means. It's that David knew what it was to be poor. That he was simply humble. That was his position. But, you know, from that, he was moved by what God was moved by. He was sad by what God was sad by. And you could see it all through the Psalms, just being able to write was just simplistic language, but describe this beautiful creation. And again, using simple language, but being able to express his sorrow. Psalm 51, one of the most beautiful, create in me a clean heart, O God, and renew a right spirit within me. Cast me not away from thy presence, O Lord. Restore unto me the joy of thy salvation. All words are just simple. We don't know these words. You know, but put together, it's like, this utterance, that is a man after God's own heart. That is what's waiting for us on this side. It's God's story. And really, what it means to like really take in the gospel, what it means to be a Christian, is not to take in and be pure and all this stuff. What it is, it's just for us to go from this rich man, and whether we are a rich person, whether we are or not, but in our minds, to go to this poor person. And that's what David had to do. If David had not become poor, you know, and he was unwilling, he's like, I know I'm not doing that. I'm not going back to that, you know. And Nathan confronting him, telling the story, he was able to soften David's heart. He said, I know where I need to get back to. And that's where going from our story, you know, to God's story. Just constantly living life in faith is like not focusing on our story, but focusing on his story. Not the things in our circumstance and what we have and don't have, but what God is doing and his blessings, regardless of, you know. And then we take that back into our lives and we're real about it, you know. And so how do we get to this place? Okay, maybe you're saying, okay, I'm starting to see it. I want to do that. But I know I'm weak like you too, Drew. How do we get to that place of just being, you know, okay with this? And even though I feel like I'm losing coming over here, how do we do that? And I just, you know, again, just going back to this passage, and it's almost 12. I'm going to end here in a couple minutes. It starts with, always starts with God. What does it say? It says that God sent Nathan to David. David didn't send for Nathan, right? And you know, it's a thing where God is always reaching out for us and sending people to us way before we think about approaching God. So it always starts with God. You know, if you're lost, you know, if you're in a, and you might find yourself where you just know you're being humbled. There's no two ways. There's not two ways about it. There's just one thing. You are being sat down, and it's time just to sit down and be humble. And you try to squirm and get up. It's like, no, you can't get a job right now. That's not what time it is. You can't do what you normally do to try to solve the situation. Not at all. You need to sit down. I know some guys going through this. One guy came to my office talking, and he's like, yeah, I'm taking a big fat L right now. And I'm just, you know, I want to try to give him all this advice. And I just, the only thing that came out of my mouth is like, you know what? There's a lot of value in just being saved. That's it, brother. I don't see nothing else for your life but just to be saved right now. It's like, how do you live there? You know, I think it starts with some stories in our mind, just recalibrating of just, it's a spiritual thing, taking in this faith of God. By faith, I'm going to believe that this poor man is a picture of you, and I'm going to try to get my heart there. I'm going to pray to you, exchanging, living it out in life, trying to trace it into your life and your tapestry, going back over here. But again, you know, by faith, just of like taking in the gospel that God is all that, and he's going to come through for you. You know, another one of our guys, he's actually, you know, just he's such a leader, you know, doing peace walks, this and that. And I noticed that he had surgery this past week, and he had a thing on his neck, and it's so weird seeing him in that place, because when I want to call like a young man, a young lion, he's who I would refer to, just have commanding everyone's respect. He can go on the block and just be like, shut it, I got it. You know, he can like, just to see him in that position where he's like, I can't even go to the bathroom by myself right now, Drew. It's so weird. You know, my wife is so scared. You know, all these guys don't know how to treat me. Why? Because he's always in this position. And again, it's like, I was just trying to be there for him. You know, not trying to give any advice. I didn't say any of this, but in my mind, I was just saying, wow, you know what? It's just time for you to be weak right now. Yes, be strong, fight through. You know, it's like whatever you can for the pain, to dull it, do it. But whatever you can do to just be strong, do it. But also, a new thing that God might be doing. Again, I ain't saying this to him. I'm just thinking this in my mind. Just be weak. Be helpless. You know, I've wiped other people after they've gone number two when they're fully able to do it themselves normally, but they were just in that spot, you know. I've never had it, you know, had me be in that position, but I've heard a lot of caretakers. Man, sometimes we're just in that place of debasement, you know. Debasement, the basement, however, you know, we're just there and he's there. You know, sometimes lions get hurt and you just need to get help. I don't know if this is coming across as like, you know, depressing, but it's just been striking me, and you know, still even just as I'm trying to make sense of it in my mind and working it all out, you know, spiritually and into action, it's like, Lord, how do we get to this place of just being able to take in your gospel and who you are in your weakness? I share my weakness and somehow you make me strong. You know, the sacrifice that you made here on earth to take all that stuff compared to who you were, you humbled yourself so that your perfect life covers over my sin. How do we just get away from constantly presenting? You know, it's like I've made a lot of hospital visits to people who've been shot, people in car accidents, you know, losing people. And, you know, over the years, the best thing I've learned about that type of chaplaincy ministry is just to show up right away, not say anything. Pray. Don't try to solve the situation. It's just, you know, again, that's, I think, just being poor about it, like being real. You show up, you got nothing to offer. Maybe God will do something. And how do we do that more and more in our lives? Living that out, of not going to the rich man's story and seeing that the poor man is God's story, and how do we get there? Just want to end with a prayer, inviting the band back up this morning. Just ask you guys to pray with me. Lord, we thank you so much for this morning, and we thank you, Lord, that you help us, Lord. And that even though we might be in a place to despair and, you know, gosh, Lord, to have, you know, something precious, something that we love, just feeling like it's being taken from us and there's no justice, it's not what we deserve. Lord, help us to know, God, that is your story. And by it being your story, help us to know, Lord, help us just to feel inside, God, that you're going to just work it all out, Lord. And it's okay because you love us. I just pray for each and every person in here, Lord, that's just trying to work out the different pieces of their lives, Lord. And you know how we can compartmentalize. Just, you know, lock it up. And because that's working well, Lord. And, you know, we're blaming someone else for being lazy when we can be, like, emotionally lazy and relationally lazy, Lord. Working 8 hours a week but still be so lazy, God. You know us, Lord. You know how we can just trick ourselves into just, you know, faking it like that. But Lord, just without any judgment on your part, we just know that you're so good like that. We just ask that you would just slowly creep in and reach and touch some of these places. That you would do your good work within us. Just that great exchange, knowing that every good and perfect gift is from the Father of lights who has no turning. And even though we're constantly turning to the left and right, upside down, not knowing our left from the right hand, Lord, that you were just always there without judgment, loving us, sending people, helping us, And really, Lord, in our helplessness, in our weakness, in our vulnerability, Lord, you are just healing us. You're bringing us back. You're lifting us up. So I just pray, Lord, just for this miracle to happen, God. This is a miracle because the world, Lord, usually crushes anyone in this position, God. But we just pray that just as you did with David, just as you did with all your people and prophets, Lord, and mainly what you did with your son, God, that resurrecting power, we ask for that this morning, Lord. Please come. May you be here, Lord, in Jesus' name.
Amen.